How much? The 1 o'clock right here?
Pardon me?
We have a 1 o'clock meeting?
Work session.
Yeah. You come to log in here, so I'll just come over.
Okay, everybody. Call this work session to order, Los Angeles County Board of County Commissioners, May 26th. It's now 1:02 p.m. Commissioner Hass, would you please lead us in the invocation?
Sir, Heavenly Father, please bless our families and friends. We ask that you meet our daily needs. Grant us favor as we strive to reach our goals. Give us health and safety as we power through our daily tasks. And that everything we say and do honor our Lord. Amen.
Thank you. Mr. Lopez, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Okay. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hess?
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
I am here. Do we have any changes to the agenda?
No changes, Commissioner.
Entertain a motion, please.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. And I'm sorry for not being in person, guys. I had to, a lot going on with this testimony today, and we still haven't been able to get anything accomplished. So I was going to do it from here at the house, and that way we could do all three things. But nonetheless, we'll move forward with the discussion of the American Rescue Plan funds. I guess we'll start off with Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioners, before you is a discussion how we may want to consider expending the American Rescue Plan monies. I think the first allocation is $1.4 million. And that should be coming to us shortly. Our finance director, Christy Coverley, submitted the application and all the paperwork that was required. And then within 12 months after receiving the first $1.4 million, we should end up receiving the second half for a total of $2.837 million, I think is what our allotted amounts to be.
Okay, so Bill, background for everybody that the funding is coming for. Has everyone had a chance to review parameters that have somewhat came out? Because it's kind of vague. It says certain entities will be receiving in two stunts of different of this funding, but then it did the new guidance come out yet, Phil? It was supposed to come out in the next couple of days from the last one that I read.
Received more guidance, I believe, the day before last Friday, I believe it was, Commissioner, and then 2 or 3 days before that, we received more guidance, but there'll be more guidance forthcoming. And so the guidance
happens. And also one comment I want to make is I had a conversation with NACO, and they're still finalizing, and they want to completely send out to all counties, 3,069 counties, the revisions as they come out. And hopefully they're pretty close to the last version. But I know I'm speaking also with John Swartoff from CCI yesterday. We do have the majority of the treasury guidelines, but expect recommendations as they're finalizing the last and final document.
Okay. So it's going to be evolving, this document, right?
I think you would. And then let me also say that I mentioned to CCI, if we go to the annual conference, there is going to be, hopefully, enough information to have a breakout session for information to be disseminated to all counties here in Colorado based upon the latest information available.
Okay, so long story short, folks, there's some guidance that comes with this, and it looks like it'll be a little bit changing at times, I would, for lack of a better word. So I think what this meeting is to discuss, kind of brainstorm the needs of the recovery funding for your different departments and see if they are qualified to receive said funds. So for instance, and I've had this discussion briefly with Mr. Dorenkamp, the ventilation of a facility would be considered on that. And so my thoughts and on something like that is your windows of your buildings, kind of like with the courthouse shortage, maybe that might be able to be utilized since that problem occurred, but also possibly any air conditioning, heating, such as if it's dilapidated. I think we have an issue at the health department on a weekly basis with a system over there that's probably outdated and needs replaced. I did speak with Kim. I don't see her on the call. Is she in the room? So
yes, she is.
Okay. So those are types of topics I think we need to discuss, and whoever wants to get up and chime in or go to the podium so I can hear, please do so.
And for let me, one of the things that I was reading actually this morning on the some of the guidelines, we have until 2026 to actually expend these funds. So at this point in time, it is a good thing to start the brainstorming session. One of my recommendations is going to be let's assess every one of the projects that's going to be coming forth. And as the guidelines evolve, definitely we'll be able to meet it. But so the decision doesn't have to be made today. This is the first of many conversations that we're going to have.
Right.
And have the 20 feet of time.
And also saw that email that the county could invest this money and the interest can be utilized on general ideas or funds. It doesn't have to go to particular. Is that how that came across, Felix?
Yes, it is. In fact, we double checked that John Swatter and I had a pretty lengthy conversation on it. And one of the points and perspective that a clarification is, since the money doesn't have to be spent until 2026, if we come up with a list of projects in the meantime, we can put this on a restricted fund account for the purposes of meeting the deadline, meeting the conditions of the agreement. But any interest collected from that account basically would be non-restricted for the purposes of whatever I believe the county would see other needs necessary. You know, because we spoke about road and bridge. What are some of the perspectives? Now, as a county, we would have to show that as a county, every single department, the aggregate of all accounts would have to be in deficit. Now, we cannot justify that one department was in deficit, the other one was positive, so on. But so the answer to my long response, yes, we could actually set this up on a restricted account where the interest that's collected could be used for other purposes within the county.
And since you're there in the room, guys, feel free, Felix, to anybody wants to speak, to invite them up, because I can't see nothing. There's no camera. And whoever speaks, please state who you are, so people on the call can hear and know who you are.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for inviting public doctor to give us this conversation.
Kim, you need to speak up a little bit. You can't hear very good.
Maybe that one. And Kim, as always, public health director for Washington and Fort Mill County District Health Department. And I want to thank you guys for allowing public health to be at the table of this conversation with the American Recovery Act. We know that we need to figure out how to make our community stronger and more resilient, and have a strategic plan and strategic investments and power and comeback with a roadmap that's going to lead us back in the future. We know Colorado is already a great place to live, and how do we make that more and better for the future as we live with sustainability of communal living in general? The top priority of public health is to bring back our community while preventing illness and preventing death. And so with that, we want to look at long-term and sustainable investments that improve critical infrastructure while improving lives and preventing disease and promoting one's health. When we look at the objectives of this American Recovery Act, we look at supporting urgent government response efforts to continue to decrease spread of the virus, reduce lost revenue, and increase the support of jobs in our community. We also look at supporting the needed economic stabilization for households and businesses, as well as addressing systemic public health and economic challenges that contribute to inequitable impacts that we have learned from the pandemic. So in talking with our state organizations, as well as other communities across the county, we're seeing that there's a large proportion of funding coming into the communities, not just this project. And so I don't know if it would be something to look at, if you're saying, hey, let's create a work group or some type of group that would have that 100-foot level as to what's coming into the community. And how do we all work together so we're not duplicating services and that. And so that's one thought of mine, but as we see public health with Los Angeles County, our public health building is our core infrastructure of fighting through the pandemic, testing, contact tracing, case investigation, as well as vaccination. We have seen some impacts over the last year that have led us to have to use other facilities to do these functions. For example, our HVAC system, when it's winter, we're 30 degrees, and then when it's spring, summer, we were even 90 degrees. We can't pull out vaccines at a safe room temperature. So we have to go to the facility. And we have been looking at that with the county maintenance department. And there, we just need to figure out how to either upgrade the system or change out the system. That system was replaced, I believe, 11 years ago. And we had a company come in from Colorado Springs with Penny and look at that and say that there may be a way to restructure it and use the system to upgrade it at a more beneficial cost. As Luis, Commissioner Lopez said, windows ventilation is a big task in all public buildings, private buildings, county buildings that we continue to look at and help our
Hey, Kim, I don't mean to interrupt, but could we have the phone number 846-3314 mute themselves? We're getting a lot of background, and I think it's causing you to be muffled. So whoever's on the call, 846-3314, please, thank you. Okay, Kim, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. And then looking at our in public health workforce capacity, I think we need to increase behavioral health support services within the community, not just behavioral health support for our older population, but as well as our younger population, as we have impacted our schools and youth through this pandemic. I think we need to have somebody support, not just in the childcare systems, but as well as the school district, whether they.
And you know, Kim, right after this meeting, we have with the opioid settlement. One of the things that was so impactful that came out last night, that in the state of Colorado, Children's Hospital, of which I'm part of a board member, they declare a kind of state of emergency. And I've been saying this from day one. The impact
suicides?
Suicides. Yeah. The impact of behavioral health here in Colorado. And I think Colorado has become one of the states that is impacted at the larger level. So we're hoping to be able to finalize the opioid settlement statewide. Right now, the amount exceeds or there about $400 million. And we understand this to be an 18-year project. On that particular one, my goal will continue to be, as the representative for the Southern District, is that we want to have facilities here in Los Angeles County to expand via behavioral health services accessibility to the people here between San Luis, Huerfano, and Los Angeles County. We have kind of the red map of this type of thing. So in any event, I think the money that's coming our way is going to be impacting us. It's going to make a big difference. So we need to absolutely agree with you with the task force that outlines how to and where are some of the areas that we need to impact. The fact is that right now money seems to be readily available and we don't want to duplicate services. And right now at this point in time, real brief also, Pueblo is part of the opioid settlement. One of the things we don't want to do is send everyone from the San Luis County to Pueblo. We want to have services available here in the San Luis County.
I am 100% on board with that. And I really think we need to figure out how to make this, as we said, and identified in the governor's behavioral health task force, there be a no longer and no discrimination against payer source, that it's equitable for everybody within our communities and be available on a timely fashion, that we have had barriers for years and not just
there's a chat in the or a statement in the chat from Jennifer Sanchez McDonald. The high suicide rate, we are ranked 48th in the state, so that's out of 64 counties. Is that how I take that, Jennifer?
No, that is Colorado. So out of the nation, Colorado is ranked 48th out of 50 states as providing mental health for children. And it is an emergency at this time.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, with, we have a behavioral health support specialist with the public health department now. We did integrate mental health with public health to do adult support services as well as the MATS opioid and substance treatment side of it. But I think as we look at this roadmap with this recovery is how do we impact our youth in the behavioral health side of this is one of my key pieces because those are our future of our community. And then looking at, we may potentially need as we increase, going into the fall, we are going to see cases impact the community, whether it's flu, COVID, hepatitis, HIV. Communicable disease is always going to be seen and it's more prevalent in the fall. So public health may need some additional support and help with contact tracing case investigation, as well as we try and get a 70% vaccination rate in our communities off our vaccination efforts and additional workforce capacity. I think we need to enhance a public health data and communication system with where our communities are at. I have a dashboard at the public health website, but I think we need to expand it and figure out how to add in the vaccination interest or vaccination interest from our communities as well as other aspects of what we're seeing. And again, not just COVID. I think we need to look at the whole population and the whole communicable disease side going forward and take the impact and invest it into the future of the community as what we have saw in the past outside of COVID and move forward. Like this is a time, like Commissioner Lopez said, we have the money that's invested strategically and carefully and impact.
But then also we need to figure out how to sustain those programs if they're going to be permanent programs. And therein lies a possible rub also.
When you spoke, you made a statement saying that systemic public health challenges are holding us back in this community. Can you expound on that? What are some of the systemic public health challenges that you see?
So we're seeing, you know, there's certain populations we're not able to reach. There's certain barriers community members always face. How do you change those barriers? How do you reduce the stigma within the communities to allow people to have access, feel safe, break down those programs or or opportunities that allow equitable and access for all. We have to figure out how to reach populations in a different way going forward and have access for everybody. I think we just need to look at that no wrong door for everybody. I think we also need to look at, you know, the educational disparities that the pandemic has brought forward. And I see it. I live it every day with my own kids. We need to expand on new or existing early learning services. We need to figure out a way to work with our schools or tutors for tutoring or after school programs that help bring back what was lost last year with that education. How do we find services to address the social, emotional, and mental health needs within this this group of that we've impacted the most? Because I think I've heard you, Commissioner Lopez, say in the past, in other meetings, we have really done damage to this generation with this pandemic. And how do we go forward and how do we look at trying to, I don't want to fix it, but add opportunities to allow for them to get back on track?
I agree with that. I think we're going to have a big, and it's a nationwide issues, not just here. The generation that of out of school for the year that we lost is going to be a big concern for their mental health going back. Some kids are going to be afraid, not just here, but you know, nationwide, because they've been in this pandemic the whole time. But the other concern too, that for those that are over out of school and in college, Mr. Hass and I were talking about this a couple days ago. What about those kids that are going on to college? Are they prepared because they had to go through a year of hybrid learning? And how are they going to do? What's their success rate going to be at the higher education level? So I think some support systems possibly could be looked at for the mental health of our students and those kids. So just thank you.
Yeah, and then just lastly, you know, in really looking at this is, how do we promote healthy childhood environments? Again, we need to look at the generation of the future. How do we expand on high quality childcare centers? Because you have to have childcare in order to have a healthy existing workforce and allow not just the workforce, but allow parents to go to court or go to different things that they need to do. How do we expand on that within our communities? And then how do you invest in that childcare population that's already there serving those individuals? To invest that they're there for the future and for those kids, because you don't want to see a revolving door with these kids in a classroom. If they're in that 1 year, you don't want to have four different people impacting them within that 1 year. You want to have sustainability, trust. Those are just some of our thoughts that we've got through with public health. I know Jennifer probably could expand more on the early childhood side and how we can impact the future of our community children and grow our own within that community to be successful and run the community of the future.
And Jennifer may have this information. Many years ago, there was a study, the school to prison pipeline. When I was at the college, you know, one of the things that we looked at very carefully, that if a student at the end of the third grade is not proficiently reading, actually meeting the 3 R's, the chances of ending incarcerated would increase. And I mean, that study is still out there. My concern right now is how many kiddos were trampled upon by the political perspective, because that's really what it became. You know, I mean, the CDPHE and all the rules that came down from Washington to the state, all over the place, we marginalized those little ones. And my concern now is with that liberty. And of all the pandemics that I've seen is one, this is the one that all of us have seen. Can you imagine what we're gonna be unearthing once this whole process is behind us? And I was actually looking at the study that was done in the 80s the prison, the school to prison pipeline in the 80s. And then that was revised in the 90s. And who knows what we're going to be with this whole thing. So I think our community can benefit from having a work group with these funds that we're going to be having. What rises to the priority number one? What's priority number two? You know, I had a great opportunity and with the governor, round table, what I said to him is provide scholarships this summer, not next summer, but this summer, a bridge program, students coming from high school, from middle school, going into college, and give them the tutoring services that they need this summer to at least get them moderately cut out into where they need to be. So I'm really worried. And in fact, there's a message from Children's Hospital. We're going to be having a board informational session where we're going to be getting probably the facts, the way the doctors and children see it. But this is going to be a pandemic that's going to be with us for many more years to come, coupled with what we just went to COVID. So
I agree. But
thank you for all you're doing there.
Thank you. And I agree. Public health will just be responding, you know, as COVID responds to become a disease side of mitigation, but we will be responding in the future on the mental health side, the substance abuse side, the early childhood side, the disease of diabetes, hypertension, because those individuals, you know, were fearful of going to the doctor or didn't want to go out, didn't keep their appointments, didn't stick with their classes that we had scheduled with our diabetes and hypertension program. So we're going to be impacting on public health, not just with disease mitigation, but the future of people's lives of public health. And that's why I'd like to see if we can benefit with this opportunity and other opportunities that have come into this community that we should try and find out and make the most bang for our buck and power that come back within this community and, you know, do something for our next generation and our next generation to come up for the future. And I mean, they are going to be running our community in the future. And so we need to prepare them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else from Kim? Okay, Felix, go ahead. Who else is in the room would like to speak? I can't see him.
Commissioner, Jennifer's got her hand up.
Oh, okay, Jennifer. You're muted.
Sorry. All right, good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Yates, and I'm the Orphan of Los Animas Early Childhood Council Coordinator. And I'm one of the 34 early childhood councils in Colorado. And it's been brought up, what do? We connect the dots to create a seamless early childhood comprehensive system, focusing on improving access, equity, quality towards positive outcomes for young children and families. Collectively, we work to ensure that every child in Orphan on Los Animas County has a strong start in life. We believe that the supports for strong families and communities, access to comprehensive physical and mental health care, and high quality early learning and learning opportunities help ensure our youngest children can reach their full potential. We collaborate with local, regional, state communities and organizations to serve as a system to improve access to and facilitate the delivery of high quality services and support for young children and their families, and help families navigate often through complex landscapes of these services. We increase the quality of learning environments, expand family services and skill, and ensure access to social, physical, and mental health services. We increase the effectiveness of early childhood professionals with training, coaching, resources, which in turn help children be prepared for kindergarten. Significantly, we are committed to closing the gap for children who face multiple barriers, including those living in low-income families, by increasing the number and percentages of infant and toddlers and preschools enrolled in high-quality early learning programs. Some of our programs include the Colorado Shines Quality Improvement for Childcare and Family Homes and Preschools, Parents as Teachers, a Home Visitation Program, our Diaper Bank, Car Seat Program, Growing Life Gardening Program, Community Screenings for Children Under 5 with free lead testing, Nurturing Parenting and Circle of Parents, which is a support program for parents and caregivers, Cooking Matters, Reach Out and Read, our Early Literacy Program, School Readiness, Professional Development Opportunities, and much more. All of these programs have been offered at no cost and offered in both counties for everyone to attend. Through the American Rescue Plan, objectives of this funding discussed educational disparities and promoting healthy childhood environments. These bullets are through new and expanding early learning services, promoting home visitation programs, and enhancing services for children and families. Investing in quality early childhood is an investment in our economy and our future. As a childcare desert, as we've been identified in both counties, we need to expand childcare to expand access for infants and tots. We have no under 12 months childcare due to the high overhead cost and limited number of children per licensing regulations. We are partners with all childcare centers, family homes, and preschools in the Bi-County region. We have heard from a handful of people who have been interested in starting a family home or childcare center, but have lacked the startup funding and or cannot find a space or building, which is not, which is within those regulational zones. We provide technical support, coaching, resources to expand quality in the early learning environments, indoor and outdoor, through our limited grant funding. Health and safety is also an issue we assess each site with, looking at their ventilation system, PPE, shade, indoor and outdoor learning environments, identify broken and very used items which need to be replaced, ensuring items are age appropriate and their policies enhance health and safety practices. Then we focus on quality, utilizing tools which are national tools known as ITERS, ECHRS, and FICRS as tools to assess quality. Quality is ongoing and very expensive to maintain. Research has shown that children enrolled in high quality preschool and childcare centers and families' homes have skills and the developmental milestones to be successful in school and life. Quality is not just materials in school. It's about having qualified staff who provide nurturing, responsive caregiving to all. We face huge turnovers in the early childhood sector due to low compensation. Early childhood professionals continue to provide childcare preschool without a premium wage or hazard pay this last year. Many licensed sites were on the verge of closing and several decreased their hours as enrollment decreased, often leaving them paying those overhead without the income coming in. And just in April, we became a Parents as Teachers affiliated site. This is a home visitation model, which is evidence-based, and we are nationally recognized. This model provides services to families with children with prenatal to kindergarten. We follow the essential requirements of the model, which provide minimum expectations for program design, infrastructure, and service delivery. PAT provides support through four dynamics components, such as personal visits, group connection, resource network, and children screening. Together, these components form a cohesive package of services with four primary goals: increase parent knowledge of early childhood developmental and improve parent practices, provide early detection of developmental delays and health issues, prevent child abuse and neglect, and increase school readiness and success. In addition, we also offer nurturing parenting circles, parents for all families. Each program that we offer is evidence-based curriculum. In addition, we have also, because of the pandemic, we have seen an increased amount of inequities. Ensuring services for children and families is needed now more than ever. Almost a year ago, we partnered with the Family Resource Center and disseminated diapers and wipes to families. The FEMA supplies were dwindled down around 4 months later. The council decided to continue the diaper bank, and since end of October, we have disseminated over 11,000 diapers and 11,000 wipes to families in the Bi-County region. This program is appreciative and the families are very thankful. However, the program is going to be running, potentially going away due to funding constraints. The car seat program has also been around for 7 years, providing new car seats for families for $20 service fee, which on average we see 100 car seats approximately each year. We're seeing an increase of requests these last couple of months. And that program is also based upon funding. Our rate of children in incorrect safe car seat 7 years ago went from 68% to 90% since this program came into place. We are also offering Cooking Matters for the last 7 years. Cooking Matters is a gold standard course and provides healthy food, which we provide prior to the course with our virtual courses. And we cook together, learning about how to cook on a budget for $10, learn more about food safety, label reading, and meal preparing. We have been offering this course virtually over the last year and seen an average of 16 participants in each course, and they are thankful as this has helped with the food insecurities. These are just a few highlights of the programs we've offered in our two counties. We know it takes a village to support children, and investing in early childhood is an investment in our economy in the future, and we would love to be part of those conversations going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. That's a lot that you guys do, and I think that we need to really look at those programs too to see if they'll fit into underneath this umbrella that will be offered. Again, I some of the programs or the comments earlier of us not repeating, I think Commissioner Felix Lopez said not repeating the same services, but I think in your case it's a lot different. Those services, DHS involvement would probably need to be looked at, and that discussion, I don't see, or is there someone from DHS in the room with Michael there today? Okay, so so some of those services, with the child care, I understand that. That could be possibly looked at and discussed with Council of Governments. I'll have that board meeting tomorrow. And I'll mention that concern from Hula on the early learning, or the, I'm sorry, the, how did you call it for the toddler, infant care?
Infants and toddlers. And unfortunately the space to expand is minimal or hard to expand. And we work with DHS in a seamless, cohesive partnership, ensuring that services are not duplicated. So we support each other, but we do not duplicate services going forward. I work with all different caseworkers and all different part departments.
Thank you. So a lot of good subjects discussed there, and a lot of, do you have that drafted, and so we can kind of get a copy of that, email that to the commissioners if you would, and Ms. Gonzalez too, if you have something, that way we can disseminate, or to Mr. Dorenkamp, disseminate some of the ideas or the thoughts behind your needs or possible needs. So I think that would help us in disseminating some of this stuff moving forward. So okay, next, or any questions from the board here?
I do want to, Jennifer, thank you so much for that information that you shared with us. How many daycare centers do we have in Trinidad, and how many kiddos do we have out there needing that service that you are aware of?
So currently we work with the two counties, and there are 10 licensed sites. So Head Start is under the federal CDI, which is a transition transition organization. Due to their state licensure and grantee has been, it expired last year. They did not receive their contract back. So CDI is under a federal transition. So with those two sites, that would be 12. But for per our state guidance, we have 12 sites. Of those, we have two child care centers and one family home that take care of infants and toddlers. There is no access to children under the age of 12 months. There is no drop-in care. Prior to COVID, all sites had waiting lists, and the waiting lists were pretty significant. We only have 32 slots for children under preschool. So if you go 3.5 up to 5 years of age, that's where we get into the school-based preschools. We are working with our preschools to expand their classroom to access more preschools due to universal preschool is coming in 2023. So we're working on those school districts right now. But for the most part, when you're looking for folks to come to work, folks to go to a court proceeding, to have access for a child under the age of 12 months, it's not seen. They are using family, friend, and neighbor, which could be family and friends, or it could be people that may not have those safety standards of CPR, safe shaken baby, and different things that we would love to support going forward. We did have requests back in September, October, for about 4 family homes to look at becoming become family homes and go through the process, but then COVID ramped up and their lives changed. So access is significant. And the overhead is quite enormous. You can only have, the licensing is very restricted as to how many children under the age of 12 months can be under one teacher or one provider, professional, because of the care of that child. And also because things can happen and they need to be there watching that child.
And does the college still offer the early childhood program?
Say that again. I can't hear. I'm sorry, yeah. Commissioner Lopez. It's muffled.
Does the college still operate the early childhood program?
Yes. So Trinidad State College does work with the has a TPREP program with the University of Colorado Denver. And so folks can go to college for their associates in early childhood and then go through the TPREP program and get their second 2 years through the University of Colorado Denver, the bachelor's. So they can do a 4-year program or less and get come out of here with a bachelor's in early childhood or elementary education and stay here in Los Angeles County or Huerfano County. We just successfully had graduates walk a couple weeks ago who were the first cohort for the TPREP program.
And do every one of those employees that work at these facilities, do they have to be certified through a certificate program?
So to work at the facility, there are guidelines that they must have a minimum qualification. And I can give you the list versus speaking of all of it, but yes, there are certain requirements per the Colorado State licensing regulation that they must have classes of. Or fall under a professional that does have those credentials. And I can send you those lists. That's what that is, those pathways.
Okay, thank you.
I've got a question, if I may. Jennifer, does the Fair Labor Standard Act or FMLA address how long a parent can stay home with a newborn child? I realize you had mentioned something about there being no 12-month and under facilities. Care facilities here in our area, but do you know about the FMLA or the Fair Labor Standard Act when it comes to newborn children and parents being allowed to stay home with them, how long that is?
So there was a legislative proposal last year for Paid Family Leave Act, and I don't believe it was passed. I will double check on that, but average is normally about 6 weeks, and that's if the family has those opportunities. Some of our families do not work. They choose to stay home and take care or have resigned from their career to take care of their little ones. In some practices, some businesses may have family friend practices, meaning that they could bring that child to their business until that child walks, crawls, or so forth, or has that opportunity to work remotely or on different schedules. So in our communities, we do have some of those family-friendly practices. And as far as the Paid Family Leave Act, I will give you the latest version of it and send that to you, Phil, and commissioners. It is something that we've been advocating for the last 5 years, knowing that infant child care is a necessity, and the state of Colorado is very minimal.
And then you were talking about universal preschool. You said that comes on in 2023?
Yes. Prop E was passed by the voters in November. And I've been part of the universal preschool leadership team, which is across the state. Across the state, there's about 45 of us. And we are working across different entities, including CDE, CDHS, on how we can make a seamless transition into universal preschool in 2023. It's very tentative. There's no black and white printed information, but I can send you some of the cornerstones from the Early Childhood Legislative Commission, the ECLC, as well as with the Colorado Children's Campaign and other partners as to what has been discussed at this time.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Jennifer, is there a place where we can identify the median income for these providers? I know you mentioned that there is wage disparity.
Sure.
Do you know what that is? And somebody's going to go to college for a couple of years or 4 years, and they're going to be making minimum wage. There's no incentive in there basically to go into the field, even though I remember the students that went through the program, they loved what they did. But at the end of the day, they don't have enough early to sustain a family.
Correct.
Information, would you send that to us?
Sure. I will send you the wage disparities. Most of them make minimum wage. We do have a couple of folks that are on full time. Either they're in a director position, assistant director position, or they've been there for, we call them lifers. They've been there for 10 plus years. But most of them are still receiving services or through services because they fall in the poverty, under the poverty limits. But I will send you those. And it's bittersweet because we get a great group of folks coming into our child care centers. We get them trained, professional development, and then our school districts kind of sort of take them. but at the same token, they leave because they need that. They need that wage for self-sufficiency. But most of them are $12 to $13.10 an hour. There is no fringe benefits because they're all mostly part-time. And most of them, and some of them may have associates or bachelors, but they do not make a wage similar to a school teacher. They probably make less than $36,000 a year.
And if you can include, a couple of years ago, you shared with me one of the studies that you found where students after the fourth grade, both they have not seen a dentist or a doctor, and you had some high percentages on that. Mm-hmm. I love to see what it is today because, you know, that's where the investment needs to be in our little ones. I mean, that is the future, and that has been my slogan, and we'll continue to support these particular programs that are securing our family's future.
The average per capita income in Los Angeles County is under $26,000 a year.
Yep. So,
I know that, and I've been preparing for the testimony with that for today's hearings, but so it's under 26,000. So imagine all the people that are, you know, like exactly what you said, it's cheaper to stay home mm-hmm. and have to pay out daycare because then, so that's probably why it keeps that average down anyway. We're running short on time. We got about another 10, 11 minutes before we have our next board meeting. Do we have anyone else that would like to come forward and speak or make some comments?
No one in the audience here, Commissioner.
Mrs. Coberly, we haven't heard from you today. Thank you for submitting the applications. Do you want to give a brief synopsis of where we're at and how this is on our end, what we need to do?
She may be with the auditor. If she's not answering, I can text her and tell her to get on.
Oh, that's okay. I was just trying to fill the next few minutes.
She said she was going to be back and forth with the auditor, and if you needed her, for me to holler at her.
No, that's fine. Mr. Dorn.
Hi, Louise. Tell me what you were asking because I missed the question.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of this application process and where we're at with it? And is it, I think we have the two parts, and just kind of give the people on the call what the county's role is.
All I know is that I've submitted everything, and I went back and I checked, and all that's been submitted, so I've heard nothing. So I don't have much information for you.
Okay.
For you that. And you know, I'm still kind of I've read a little bit of the guidelines, but I'm waiting for the final piece to come through. So I think Until we know that, we don't really know what we want to spend it on.
Yeah, it was a bit unclear.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure, you're welcome.
So, and then another thought too, I got a call today from a contractor here in town regarding some road and bridge. I don't think we can use, I think Mr. Dorenkamp alluded to that, we can use any of this funding for road and maybe bridges that are dilapidated. I can't remember, Phil, what did you say about that?
Commissioner, my first time through the guidelines and even the most recent guidelines, I do not believe that's going to be permissible. Any kind of road, bridge, or anything regarding that type of transportation is going to be permissible to use these funds on.
Okay.
Other infrastructure like stormwater issues, which we do have here at the courthouse, we may be able to look at addressing those. And I put a list up on our end of different things that we've kicked around. So,
and at my board meeting tomorrow with COG, I've asked Walt to kind of possibly put a wish list together if there was needs for COG. I mean, this money needs to stay in Los Angeles County. If we can't find an entity, we want to find every and all, in my opinion, to keep it here and utilize it here for the services that we all differently provide for our residents and our, and especially the children. You know, that it's so sad to see what's happened, and now hearing that some kids haven't seen a dentist until they're in the fourth grade or 4 years old. I mean, that's ridiculous. So anyway, any other comments from the commissioners?
Ms. Gonzalez has a comment.
We couldn't hear a word she said. Could you guys repeat that?
She'd be happy to come to the podium and repeat that. Sorry.
I just want to make sure that we look at this in an equitable way and make sure that we have an opportunity for all child care centers in the community. I know COG is our biggest one, but we do have others. We have the one that's at the Trinidad High School. We have the one that he's in a pod, Head Start, which will probably be up and running very shortly. I don't know if Janet can address more on those, but there are more out there, and I think we really need to expand opportunities for them as well.
Okay, and we'll have many more of these. We've got, like I said, 2024 to get those spent and stuff. So I'm sure we'll be having quite a few meetings on this moving forward. But great start, great conversation today. Thank you all for joining. And Phil, are we flipping over to a different link for the next one?
Yes, Commissioner, it's a completely different meeting.
Thank you. At this time, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn, please.
Motion to adjourn.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Jennifer.